This is Side One of The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds.
And I'm David Hyde. New documents leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden have exposed a British spy program. It's called Optic Nerve. The Guardian newspaper reports that program collected millions of pictures of U.S. citizens and others who chatted with one another online using Yahoo webcams. Ben Weisner is a legal advisor to Edward Snowden, and he directs the Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project for the American Civil Liberties Union. He was here in Seattle today, which gave us the rare opportunity to talk to him in person about this story, about Edward Snowden, and about the future of privacy in the United States. Ben told me the newest leak to come out about Optic Nerve is one of the creepier programs he's heard about.
This was a program from the NSA's British counterpart, the GCHQ, where they managed to, on a mass basis, intercept webcam video from Yahoo users, from millions of them. Much of it was sexually explicit, and they got it because they could. This is really one of the things that we've learned about our spy agencies, that all of these activities are of our lives that never would have been recorded before. Now that digital footprint stays forever, and the spy agencies have made it their mission to collect as much of it as possible and to store it for as long as possible and to mine it for patterns and for guilty behavior.
Ben Weisner is with the ACLU. He's also legal advisor to former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. I'm wondering if you talk to Edward Snowden. Do you contact him? How do you communicate?
Well, I actually have been over to visit him in Moscow, so we did spend some days together there. But yeah, we do communicate quite regularly over encrypted channels. If you're going to ask whether I have complete confidence that we can communicate without surveillance, the answer is no one can have that kind of confidence. We can raise the cost of surveillance. But if there's an attacker as sophisticated and well-resourced as the NSA, the question is whether they would undertake the legal and political risk of trying to intercept an attorney-client privilege involving the ACLU. I hope the answer is no, but we do communicate quite regularly.
What sort of legal advice does he need at this point?
Well, you know, he's always had more than one goal. You know, this is someone who did not put his own safety, security, and well-being first. If he did that, he'd be in Hawaii right now. So I would sort of break it into two broad categories. Number one, he wants to facilitate and advance surveillance reform. And helping him participate in that debate is a part of our representation. Number two, he needs to live somewhere. Now, one place that's available for him to live is a prison cell in the United States, where the government would love to have him report. But if you believe, as I do, that that's not the right outcome for Ed Snowden, then he still needs to live somewhere. Russia has granted him 1 year of asylum. It's certainly likely that they will extend that. But there's work in other countries to see if we might be able to find somewhere else for him to live. And ultimately, the goal is to bring him back to the United States with dignity, where he can actually be part of the solution and not just be a felon, as the government would like to portray him.
Well, he's charged under the Espionage Act, or would be charged under the Espionage Act. Is that going to be possible? Is that ever going to be possible?
Well, anything is possible. If you had told me in July, when I first began communicating with him, when he was in the airport lounge still in Moscow, that, you know, by the end of the year, the most important newspaper in the world, the New York Times, would write more than 1,000 words in an editorial calling for clemency, that people who were running for president in 2016 would use the clemency word in connection with Edward Snowden. I would have said, I think it's going to take longer than that. So sure, it is possible. Look, nothing that has been said about Edward Snowden wasn't said about Daniel Ellsberg, and worse, when he leaked the Pentagon Papers. You know, as time goes on, people realize more and more that he's motivated by the public interest. They realize more and more that far from harming the country, he has in fact revitalized our oversight institutions. You know, remember, the first thing that President Obama said in response to these disclosures was the American people shouldn't worry about it because these programs were approved by all three branches of government. Well, that's true, but that's exactly the problem. As long as this stuff was being overseen in secret, no one was challenging it. But what has changed in the last few months? Review has moved from secret intelligence courts into open federal courts, and now the judges are saying it's probably unconstitutional rather than rubber stamping it. Congressional debate has moved from intelligence committees to the broader Congress, and now they're considering the most sweeping intelligence reform since the 1970s. And the only difference between then and now is an informed public, and that could only have happened through the work of Edward Snowden and journalists.
Ben Weisner is with the ACLU, also legal advisor to former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Let's
rewind from the question of surveillance reform, which is something you back for a minute, and just can I ask in the broadest sense what you think Edward Snowden's revealed about where we are in the United States in 2014 when it comes to privacy?
Well, again, I think privacy might be too narrow a frame for what we're talking about. I think we're really talking about freedom. What Edward Snowden has revealed is something that many of us were anxious about even before these revelations, and that is that technology develops much faster than law. And surveillance technology in particular has outpaced democratic controls. 25 years ago, our principal protection against much of this stuff would not have been law. It would have been cost. If the government wanted to track us, it had to make decisions about who to track because it was expensive to do it. If I wanted to know your location, I might have to have teams of agents following you around. You know, now one officer can open up his laptop and track hundreds or thousands of people in real time. So now for the first time in our history, it's technologically and financially feasible for governments to collect and store all of our movements, all of our communications, all of our associations. What Snowden has showed us is that they're already doing it. And they're already doing it under a legal theory that essentially says the Constitution doesn't come into play when we're just intercepting this information and storing it. The Constitution only comes into play when we decide that we want to query this database, search this database on behalf of individuals, which essentially means that they could, under this theory, put cameras in all of our homes and just say, we won't look at the footage unless we decided that you've done something wrong. It would be a very, very different kind of world if we knew that the government was sitting on this absolutely comprehensive time machine that allowed it to hit rewind on all of our lives if we or someone near us came under suspicion. What Snowden showed us is that we're very much on the way towards that world. And if we don't put in the right kind of democratic controls now, it might be too late to do it later.
The government says, of course, in its defense, look, we're only gathering metadata. Why should you be worried about this gathering of metadata? What's the concern there?
Well, first of all, it's not true. I mean, the government is gathering huge amounts of the content of our communications. But I think more importantly, if you were to ask intelligence and law enforcement officials if they could have either content or metadata on a mass scale, almost all of them would say metadata. And they would say it because content can be disguised. You and I can have a conversation that's in code where you and I are the only ones who know that rooster actually means pizza.
Let's do that for the rest of this interview, actually. That's a great idea.
But metadata cannot be disguised. And very often, it's more important for the government to know who was speaking to whom than what was said. If you're investigating an unauthorized leak to the press, it's usually enough for the government to know which reporters were speaking to which people in the national security state. Now take that kind of information on a mass scale, where they have the metadata not just of you or me, but of everyone. There's not a lot that the government doesn't know about you from having that metadata about all of us. It's extraordinarily sensitive material.
I guess the other point you hear people making is, look, and I think it's primarily kind of techno enthusiasts, this is a wonderful world we're living in now. And plus, we're already voluntarily giving up a lot of this data through Facebook and social media. So technology is a wonderful thing. It's great that my phone's tracking me so I'm able to find it and find myself. What's your response to that kind of techno enthusiasm?
Well, I think that really is the challenge. How do we create the right set of rules and protections that allow us to get the benefits of these technologies? Because there is, as you say, a technological cat that's out of the bag. Opt-out is not a plausible or serious option for any of us at this point. We are in a world where there are also lots of positive uses for some of this aggregated data. It's good that the National Institutes of Health can get aggregated medical data. It's going to help them with research. I think there's a difference between private entities having this information and national security and government agencies having it, who can use that information to make life or death decisions, decisions about who to put on a watch list. And again, we're not talking about ending surveillance here. We're talking about ending indiscriminate mass dragnet government surveillance and going back to a kind of surveillance that worked better in the past, which is where suspicion comes first and search and seizure come second. And we will need to have a robust set of rules that don't just allow the NSA to turn Google and Facebook and Yahoo into their subsidiaries.
You know, you mentioned earlier legislation to try to increase or reform surveillance practices. But what about the Supreme Court? Some of these questions are going to come down to them. Where is the Supreme Court right now when it comes to questions of surveillance?
Well, there's some good news on that front. In 2012, the Supreme Court decided a case called Jones versus United States. And this was a case involving GPS tracking. Now, the government's position in that case was, how can the Fourth Amendment give you privacy protection for where you drive your car in public? Anybody can watch. You know, we could follow you around, and you couldn't say that we're not allowed to follow you around because of the Fourth Amendment. The Supreme Court took a different view, and they said, you know, the technology actually changes this question. The fact that the government can, at no cost, track a single individual everywhere, you know, for 30 days, for 60 days, for 90 days, makes this a constitutional question. And the Supreme Court said for the first time in a unanimous decision that GPS tracking is a Fourth Amendment search. I think the same kind of rationale will apply here to this metadata question. You know, the Supreme Court said in the 1970s that the metadata from one phone call doesn't enjoy constitutional protection. But that's really not the same thing as the metadata from every phone call of every American over a period of years. And I have some confidence that the court will treat the question differently.
So I know you're not carrying a crystal ball unless you've got one disguised, sort of hidden somewhere in some sort of spyish way. What do you see as the future of privacy, though, in the United States, if you had to give us that kind of science fiction prediction of what's going to happen?
Well, you know, I think that there are scary trends, and I think that there are positive trends. I do think that we're going to, in some sense, learn to live with a society in which we are more aware of being tracked at all times. And I do worry about the chill that that's going to have on what it means to be a person and what it means to be a free person. You know, at the same time, I'm so encouraged by the energy of the debate that has gone on since the Snowden disclosures, not just in the United States, but around the world. And I have some hope that not just governments, but also smart, young, idealistic technologists will help us come up with technological solutions that will protect us from mass surveillance.
Ben Weisner directs the ACLU's Speech Privacy and Technology Project, and he's a legal advisor to former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Ross Reynolds. I'm David Hyde.